There you go. Now, we are indeed friends, very, very honored and delighted to welcome the new chairperson of the New York GAA, Joan Keeley Henchy. How are you, Joan?
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
I was often better, but weren't we all, you know?
Exactly. It's finding the new normal is becoming increasingly difficult.
All right. As a matter of fact, I think there should be a ban on the word normal if we find out where we're going here.
Yeah, I agree. It's a word now that defines the dictionary as to what normal really is.
Listen, before we talk about a new and exciting foundation let's get to that in a minute. But I want to, first of all, congratulate you as being the new chair of the New York Gaelic Athletic Association. You are the first female to hold that position.
I hate making it gender orientated, even though I appreciate it is, you know, for young girls and so on and so forth, the symbolization doesn't surpass me. I'm very proud that young girls have something to look up to in the organization if they wish to do so, but it comes down to just hard work and proving your worth and, you know, as much and all as, I'm very, very proud that I am a female in this organization. You don't get stuff like this without putting your shoulder to the wheel. And, you know, I think my message for girls is just because it's male oriented, it doesn't mean you don't belong. You certainly do. And if you put your mind to it and if you're passionate about it and if you love it as much as I do, you'll serve your time. And I started at the bottom, and I worked my way up.
And to that end, you might, this is over, like, you've been, what, over 20 years?
Actually, 20 years this year, so I've 20 years of, time put in as an officer to the New York GAA. I remember my very first meeting going, and it would have been all new to me. I remember John Reardon, Lord to Mercy, and there was some issue at the time, and God knows John was probably stuck in the middle of it with Kerry and didn't want to go up there. So he sent Anne Holland, and I were the only two girls in the Kerry Club at the time, and we went up, and I guess I was an alternate delegate or whatever at the time, and we went up to a meeting. I remember Monty Maloney was the chairperson. Yeah. And I remember walking in going, what in goodness gracious name am I walking into here? So we had that meeting, and I think there was some objection to Kerry or something, and of course no better two women than to fight our corner. But we had to come back the next week, and I didn't realize walking in the next week that I was walking into an AGM, and I walked out a trustee nominated by Seamus Collins, and I said, what just happened? And I've been there since. So went from trustee to the register to the, I was the PRO for a while, and from there to the assistant secretary, and then secretary, and now chair.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you, we're all very happy and about your position, and I promise I'll drop it after this. But whatever bulldozer you and your supporters use there, God bless you. But anyway, tongue in cheek there. Let me ask you about the Gaelic Athletic Association and what it represents, because for most of us and many people, you think of Gaelic Athletic Association, you think of Gaelic football. And, you know, and then you think, hurling, that's it. But that doesn't even scratch the surface.
Doesn't scratch the surface. Yeah. I mean, our games, look at everybody just, you know, it's the game, but it's not. I think the GAA, on a broader level, we're community based. We don't throw the word around, and I've said this in numerous interviews in the last couple of weeks, We don't throw the word family around loosely. We genuinely mean that. So be a player or a member of a club or whatever it is, you know, when they need something, the association is there. It's a networking. People get work out of it, make acquaintances. You know, Irish people are very good about sharing experiences and assistance and stuff. And you see that on a daily basis in the GA.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of that because, you know, you have the people, the naysayers and stuff, and, you know, I've heard all of the cliche remarks that go around the association. I don't take it personal, but
yeah.
I would be very adamant that we're not a grab-all, and, you know, we certainly put a lot of time and effort in, and that's forgetting at any stage. We're volunteers. We don't get paid to do any of this.
Right.
None of it. You know, this can be a full-time job if you allow it to be, but it is an unpaid position. We take nothing out of this other than the love of the love of the game, the love of our GA community, our family, and more so, I guess, with being exiles in particular for me, it's that sense of Irishness that you get out of that and our heritage and our culture and that whole social environment that goes around meeting people. And it's just, I don't know, I don't think any other ethnic group in the entire world does socialization as well as the Irish do.
Well, you're not going to get any argument from me on that one. I want to, again, though, just, if you wouldn't mind, just run down like a couple of you know, the areas. Okay, you've got Gaelic football, you have hurling.
We have camogie.
Camogie.
We have a resurgence, thank God. We have, so a couple of girls came to me. Actually, a young girl by the name of Jane McCooney started Liberty Gales maybe about 5 years ago and just pulled a bunch of girls together. And, I mean, ultimately, there was no camogie program here. And it was something that we had been looking at. But I guess the resources and so on and so forth may not have been there for any one organization because we have the ladies, the minor, and the senior board. So I kind of got talking to a couple of people and I said, what about, you know, could we start this kind of up again? So Ger Lavery is phenomenal. I love Ger and Ashton Daly. And they got so involved and so passionate with it. And then our hurling development officer at the time was Mickey Quigg, who's now our games development manager. He got promoted. He's a hurling enthusiast as well. And we started up the camogie. So we now have, I think here in New York, we four ladies. Clubs, and we have started it at underage as well, and we've seen a huge amount of interest and growth in our hurling programs. And a few years ago, with Lawrence McGraw was the chair at the time, and in fairness to Lawrence, he gave me an awful lot of leeway, and he gave me my head on a couple of initiatives that I felt were very important to the organisation, and I felt it needed a little bit of a it needed leadership at a higher level, and we started up county development programs.
Okay.
So we have a county camogie, county hurling, and a county football development programs, which entertain kids from 17 onwards. The initiative there, particularly the hurling and football, and keeping in mind that the camogie program is very, very young at the moment, and we still have a lot of work and growth to go there, identifying our home-based Irish American Indigenous young men that are falling through the cracks and weren't being picked up by clubs and were being maybe not intentionally sidelined for an Irish counterpart and stuff. And my attitude for the last number of years has been how important it is to home base and home grow your players and your survival in New York and how we're going to be the best that we can be is their full inclusion. And we had to offer them the tools and we had to offer them all the assistance we could to do that. And this year was finally, we were going to see some results out of that. We had, I think, a total of 15 of our development squad were called into the New York senior training setup. And there was at least 6 of those young men that were going to make that panel, if not starting this year against Galway, if that game had got ahead in May. So for us, that's huge. And then ultimately with the hurling, the trying to get a New York County hurling team back into a competition again, and we're hoping for some inclusion soon in the Laurie Maher with at least 50% of that team being made up of Irish American players as well. Because again, New York is American, and we have to be very mindful of the fact that we do have this talent here. And if you give them, they're like sponges. God bless them. I love them. They're amazing. Their enthusiasm, their passion, just is second to none. I mean, they love the sport, and we've got to give it to them, and we've got to give them every opportunity we can to make them the best that they can be.
And in that regard, you mentioned it, and we many of us take it for granted that, you know, when you see the great number of neighborhood clubs that develop into junior clubs, a lot of enthusiasts and those who want to keep the tradition alive are taking their kids as soon as they're able to walk around without falling down, and they're introducing them, you know, to Irish, to Gaelic football, and to and again to hurling, to all of that. This is something that actually gives continuity. Mm-hmm. And it gives a rebirth to a very serious situation, is because, as many of us know, due to the asinine immigrant regulations that we have here, truth of the matter is that we have not had, and don't expect anytime soon, the what used to be known as the backbone of the GAA. Those are people who came out here and emigrated. That's all gone by the board. So then we have to rely on, and not only rely, but it's a great opportunity for, you know, for Irish Americans, for a lot of others, to keep that going. And it's not, you don't have to pull teeth to get it going. They love it.
I cannot express how passionate I am about these kids. And they'll be 50, and I'll still call them kids, because most of them would have grown, a lot of the 20-something, early 20-somethings would have grown up with my girls, and they'll always be kids to me. But our development officer, God bless him, Mickey, is just an abundance of energy as well. He's like a child. He's in the middle of all of them. But when he was the hurling development officer, he told the kids that they had to have a hurl with them at all times, that take the hurl everywhere. So, you know, like you and I walk out the door with the keys of our car, or the key of the house in our pockets, these kids were walking out the door without a hurl, with the hurl. And it was hilarious, because I remember one stage meeting a person on Katona Avenue, and wouldn't be Irish or any, would have no clue other than she lived in an Irish community. And I remember she stopped and she goes, "Would you please tell me?" She said, "Why are these kids walking around?" She said, "With sticks." Yeah. And I just started laughing. I said, you know, to a non-Irish, or people who are not familiar with the sport, they think it's a weapon. But these kids went everywhere with the hurl, and you can see it. And ultimately, my heart breaks for them at the moment, because the little ones are doing okay in terms of, you know, mom and dad are able to go and puck a ball or kick a ball in the backyard, and they're able to keep them entertained. And, you know, smaller kids or younger kids can tire a little easier, and it's easy to entertain them. It's that 17, 18 to 21 and 22-year-old that I worry about right now in this particular environment, because those basic skills they have, they need continual challenges and stuff, and they're at that really high level. And trying to give them, you know, thank God for social media, I suppose, giving them challenges and stuff and asking them to post it and let us see and stuff. But you worry about that age group, because they've never seen anything like this before, and they don't quite understand what is going on, I would think. You know, you can't see your friends, they can't hang out, you know, they can't get in the car and drive down to Gaelic Park. And if you don't mind, there's one particular story I'd like to share, and this happened recently. And to be honest with you, I got into the car, and I'll tell you, I cried a river on the way home. I happened to run down to Gaelic Park. We were getting ready to start the piles and the foundation. And this is maybe a couple of days prior to us having been shut down in the construction site. And I walked into the site for whatever reason anyway, and I saw a shadow in the cutout plexiglass in the safety fence. And I thought, right, John, you're imagining something. And then I thought again, and I was like, all right, there's somebody in the pitch. Now, keep in mind that everything is shut. Front gates are shut, side gates, parking lot, everything is shut. And I'm looking and I'm like, oh my goodness, they said local kids must have jumped the fence and gone in and, you know, whatever, and they can't be in there. So I'm thinking, all right, do I have the keys? I go to the car and get the key. And as I'm doing so, I look again and I'm like, oh, for goodness sake, they're not local kids. They're my kids. So anyway, by the time I got in and got the gate opened, they were gone. Now, they hadn't seen me, but they had, I guess, they had their time up or whatever. And I watched how they had gotten in and whatever. So I drove to the back of the Delhi Park, which is the old hill, which is now parking lot. And here comes the 10 of them into two cars coming down, and you could see the heads just dropping, and they were like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. And I just said, lads, you know, we're closed for a reason. There's two carloads of you. You know, you really have to pay attention to the guidelines. I said, and if you really need to get in, you know, give me a call. I'd appreciate it, as opposed to maybe getting in without a key. And maybe we could figure out a way where two or three of you could meet up, or four, you could meet up together and stay within the guidelines or whatever. And they looked at me, and one in particular, and I'll never give up their names, but one, I could see the tears welling in his eyes, and he's 19, and he just said, we did not know where else to go. And that broke my heart, that for them, Kelly Park was a safety net. It was like a safety blanket. And that just resonated with me that, you know, these are who I represent. These are what we represent here in New York. These are the ones that we need to, you know, they love it that much that the only place they felt safe was in Gailey Park, even though it was closed.
God's help. We will be back again. I want to ask you, though, as one of the founders of a group of very significant organizations, very active organizations. You got together over the last couple of weeks, and now you have your organization is called Sláinte, the Gaelic word for health, and Sláinte 2020. How did that come about?
I can't get too much credit on this. The person that deserves the most credit and had the mindset was Katrina Clark. We were all at different levels of the five groups, the major groups that are involved, trying to figure out, you know, how are we going to help our community and what could we do? I mean, not one of us individually would have the resources, financial resources, to help individuals at a large, in large numbers. And I mean, ultimately that's, you know, very sad for us as well, like, because you do want to make sure your own are taken care of, but to what degree financially would we be able to assist in the GEA? I mean, you know, copper maybe or whatever. And then, of course, the helplessness, you know, of not knowing what we can do and we want to help. And then we're thinking, you know, Katrina was had a quick meeting and stuff, and we all had a chat. And we decided, this was the way to go, because the phrase has been thrown around here, and stronger together being one of them. And I actually felt that that phrase right now probably means the most, because, together, all of us, those five units, together are much stronger than each of us taking to a GoFundMe page or different groups setting up and not being able to help the diaspora in the numbers that we'd like to be able to help. And nobody's case is any less difficult than the next person's. And it was just something that we felt, you know, the business people, to be fair, in this town are amazing to each and every one of us, to the GEA. And I'm only going to speak on behalf of my own association. I know how important those business people are to us and to our clubs, be it journal ads and dinner dances and, you know, raffle tickets and sailor tickets and, you know, Gaelic Park fundraising initiatives and all these various things. And they're the very, very core of who supports us. Now their staff are unemployed. And I, you know, we felt that it was very important that we help them too. And by making sure that their staff and who may not be eligible for unemployment benefits or may not have enough of savings. And then even though, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, that you know, we don't have the surplus of undocumented arriving here anymore, but there's still a few there, and we still have to make sure they're eligible for a squat.
Yeah.
And that's the, you know, we need to make sure that they know that they have some place to come and that we can help them to the best of our ability. So this group of people are just amazing, each and every one of them. These organizations pulling together, and to be honest, it's all the .org organizations we're asking for help from, and to give back to this, because ultimately this is not $100 journal ad to a club. This is to the entire Irish and Irish American community here that are being affected right now and need the help.
My guest friend is John Keely Henshey. Am I pronouncing that Keely right?
No, it's Kylie.
Oh, God.
Kylie. Hi. It's Kylie. My dad would have been, you probably would have known him back in the day, was out here in the 60s. He owned the Red Mill.
Oh, my God. From Kerry.
Yes. Yeah. The love of my life.
You know, I know. So, oh, boy. All right, I got that one wrong. A little bit like most people, even though I've spelled it out and been around, you know, since Adam was a lad, most people have no problem at all in saying, listen to you, oh, my God, since the day you came to the town or whatever it is. And then they introduced me as Flannery. You know. And this reaches a point where you let it go. But anyway, well, you're from good stock. Now, you mentioned Katrina Clark. She's the face of the Aisling Irish Community Centre.
She is.
And she's great. Now, so you're getting this organisation together, and it didn't waste much time. Now, first up, with the first check, the New York Gaelic Athletic Association slapped down $10,000 the beginning of a fundraising. Now, you also got very, as I say, significant and active organizations. You got the United Irish Counties. You got...
The Ashley Center, Irish Counties, the New York Irish Center, the Irish Immigration, Emerald Isle, and the New York GAA.
Now,
so there's five of us. Yeah.
Okay. Again, I think it's no harm, as you know, as we had mentioned earlier in the program when we're talking about Solace House, the sources of generosity for all things Irish, they're in the Shochron, as we say in Ireland. They're in a mess too. So this is a different time, and perhaps, you know, for those of us who through the years have, you know, through all the county organizations, just about every organization that traditionally have been around for, you know, many of them for more than a century. Yes, we had a great number of people that shared their success, went to their pockets and took the money and didn't even blink an eyelash. And in fact, many of us felt that, well, that's what they do. So there's no point in, we don't have to thank them tremendously. But now, new day, and all the resources, and I applaud Sláinte 2020. How I was going to ask you, how different is your organization, but we've already explained that one. You mentioned, and I'm glad that you did, that there are more than a few undocumented people who are, you know, who are here. They're all around us. Yeah. And, you know, some of them have been here for many, many years. They've had their relationships here. They've had their marriages. They've had their kids.
Yeah.
And they're living in the shadows. Most people, you know, and definitely in our community, we don't differentiate. Oops. Sorry about that. But we don't, they're not singled out. And, but now, as everybody is talking about, you know, the trillions of dollars that are going to, that's in Washington, if they get to the post office anytime soon, it should, you know, that should be spread out and, you know, Bob's your uncle, everything is going to be fine. Unfortunately, as we all look towards, you know, existing and waiting for some kind of assistance from, indeed, all of this money that, you know, was specifically, you know, we're all supposed to stand up and give a round of applause because all the powers that be down there come up with a couple of trillion dollars. Coming down to it, there are not only some young people, but across the board, there are a great number, you know, people who are undocumented. And indeed, some of them have, as undocumented, have paid their taxes all along. But they're out of, they're finished. They're nothing coming.
There is nothing coming. And look, we all know, and you know, these checks that you're supposed to be getting and all the rest of it, and they're to try and stimulate the economy and all the... The undocumented have had a huge part in our economy. They pay taxes. They work. They pay rent. They purchase houses. They're part of society. It's just unfortunate that, as you said, and I'm not going to get into the politics of it because I've been involved in the Irish immigration reform movement since 85, and this is ongoing since then, and it's not gotten any easier, and if anything, it's gotten even harder. Even those trying to come here legally, the bar just keeps raising and raising and raising to the point that it just makes no sense. But those undocumented, and again, I just want to stress that it's not as many as there used to be. However, there are people here that, like you said, have children. They're going to school. They're paying taxes. They own homes. They're eligible for nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
There are people here who've had readjustment statuses, immigration and adjustment statuses, for however, whatever. Again, not my call, not my judgment. But anybody who's had a readjustment, who have, and this is something I don't know if people realize, you're now legal. You've had your readjustment. You may have had a co-sponsor. If you've had a co-sponsor for that status readjustment for your green card, you are not eligible for any benefits, period, for 10 years, irregardless of the pandemic. So even though that person is here legally and had their readjustment, they're not eligible. Mm. And their legal status now. And they can't do it if you've had a co-sponsor. Yeah. So there's a lot more to the you know, it's multi-layered, it's multifaceted. The entire, I think for us and our group, we look at the Irish and Irish American community, period. We are not, your status is not at issue here, being illegal or otherwise. And the one thing, and I think you'll understand this as well, and I'm sure many of your listeners do, we have a horrific disease of Irish people, and it's called Irish pride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we all suffer from it. And this is not the time to do that. Reach out to us. We want to make sure you're okay. you can check your Irish Pride in for a couple of months, and when everything is back up and running again, you can check your Pride back in again. Right now is not the time to, you know, be afraid to ask for assistance. Right now is not the time to, for any reason, reach out to us, even if you just need to talk to somebody. We're giving the opportunities for you, be it on a financial level, to help. You know, we want no one to hurt here and struggle. And the five units that are involved are all community-based. Every one of us are community-based. We're all on the ground every day. We meet these people on a daily basis. And we don't mind who you are. Please come forward. This is what we're about. This is looking after each other here now, more importantly than ever, is to offer that.
John, you speak for so many of us, and in particular, again, and we want to acknowledge and thank the GAA, the United Irish Counties, the Aisling Irish Community Centre, the New York Irish Centre, Emerald Isle Immigration Centre. And if you, whereas there is an urgent need right now, no time to waste in terms of getting support through very established organizations. Every single one of them, this is not new to them, because all of these organizations and many others have been doing this very quietly for
3 years.
So many decades. And now we can't afford to be quiet about it anymore. There's one area that I would like you to address, Joan, and that is, you know, you were talking about our pride and whatever, you know, and God knows we're all, I think that was, you know, part of original sin and the baptism wash it out. But there are some people who can't, who won't, and tying that into anxiety and depression and all of the other stuff. But there are those who know that there are families who just simply don't have the rent. They don't have, you know, the food. They don't have the support that they need at this point. I think that despite, you know, our great failing in being, you know, in like you properly said, shelving, you know, some of our pride, there are neighbors. There are people we know. They're not going to. They're not going to do anything that resembles taking a handout. Yeah. As a community, we have always and ever not only taken care of our own community, but we do it, you know, with...
In the broader sense as well,
Yeah, you know.
Look, the one thing here, and just before I forget something, and I'm just slightly off of what you're saying, I'll come right back to it. The New York GAA, and I want people to know, the senior board, the senior board, minor board, New York Ladies and Gaelic Federation, the $17,000 have gone into this account from us. And I'm talking about the GAA family as a whole, no distinction between senior board, minor board, ladies or otherwise. The New York GAA family have given $17,000. And I want to give a huge shout out to Danny Brown in the minor board, Nori Cleary in the ladies board, and Stephanie Matters, who really put their shoulder to the wheel with me with regards getting this, getting these stipends to help. But going back to, you know, people maybe not wanting to come forward or whatever, look, you know what, if you don't want to go on that website, I would suggest go on the website and check the link and see the application process. You'll see that we have, everything is confidential. But if you feel uncomfortable, there is no reason. If you know somebody in any of those five organizations that are involved in Sláinte, pick up the phone and call one of us. We don't mind.
Right.
We don't mind. And we'll redirect that for you. And we'll reiterate to you that your confidentiality is foremost in our minds. Your privacy is foremost in our minds. Your status, none of it matters right now. None of it matters right now. Come to us. If you need to talk to somebody, and I know Rebecca with Solace House,
yeah,
they're there. You know, the Ashton Centre have a full-time social worker. We've got people that will talk to you as well. It doesn't matter how small or insignificant you think that is. It could be huge for somebody else.
Absolutely.
So we are there, and with the resources are there, and I'm just asking people to please utilise this if you need it. Please utilise this if you need it. It's there for it, and I'm begging people to just please reach out to us. We are here. There is no judgment here. Your privacy is foremost. Nobody is repeating this information. That's not what we're about. And I would ask anybody, and I know there's more people out there that would love to help and that may not be in a position to throw in $10,000 or $1,000. You know what? There's a donation link there. If you want to help and you can only afford $20, please do so. Everything we can get and every assistance we can get to assist those that are genuinely in need right now, there is no donation too small. And that is genuine. And everything we're doing right now is for our the community and to make sure that they know that there's somebody there, be it for financial assistance or even just to put you in contact with somebody that can have a chat with you. You could just be having a bad day.
You know, if I were to add anything, Joan, to what you have spelled out for us there, I would only dilute it. Fair play to you and to, you know, the Gaelic Athletic Association, to the United Irish Counties, and, of course, to centres who have, you know, centres that have been providing all kinds of services. Plenty of experience, like, again, the Ashling Irish Centre, the New York Irish Centre, the Emerald Isle Immigration. To make it easy, I think that, first of all, Sláinte is an expression that not only is it known, you know, throughout America, and Ireland, but throughout the world, I think that when somebody picks up a glass and says Sláinte, it's to good health. It's a great, it's a great organization, very recognizable. And to all of you, again, thank you. It's the website is www. Sláinte, spelled S-L-A-I-N-T-E, Sláinte2020.org. John Henshey, you don't think I'm going to take another stab at your...
and Kylie, trust, nobody knows me here as Kylie. They all know me as Henshey. And when I go home, nobody knows me as Henshey. So Kylie comes back and play, which is why I have the double banger on the name.
Listen, you have the best of both worlds, and you're using the best of both worlds. We're delighted indeed. You know, to have you on with us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me on. And again, everybody, look, stay safe, stay well, and Sláinte, you know.
Okay, Sláinte. Thank you.
Sláinte.
Thanks.
All right, go Margaret.
Go Margaret. Thank you.